Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Tuesday, June 4th. 50 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City, 54 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, good morning, Park City and Heber. We've got a really nice day shaping up today. There's still some lingering cloud cover across some of the higher elevations, but clearing out nicely throughout late morning and afternoon. We're going to see sunny skies take over. Temperatures closer to seasonal averages today. Should see upper 60s. That means for Park City, Heber, about 76 degrees as well. Sunshine should be in abundance again tomorrow. So high pressure is sliding east from the west, and so that's going to allow for more clear skies. With high pressure in place, we typically see sinking at the higher elevations in the atmosphere, which allows the air to warm and compress. And so we usually see dry conditions and plenty of blue sky, and that's what's in store for your Wednesday. We warm up almost 10 degrees, 77 for Park City. Overnight lows will be in the upper 40s as you head out the door Wednesday morning. For Heber City, about 86. And then the warm-up continues from there as the ridge kind of parks itself over the Four Corner region that brings in a southerly flow across much of our state, and so we'll be in the 80s starting Thursday, planning on a high of 84 with overnight lows in the low 50s, so not quite as cool. And then we're going to hang out in those mid-80s on Friday and on Saturday. Changes over the weekend, we're going to maintain fairly nice temperatures, above average conditions, but we're going to start to track a little bit of moisture moving up from the south. This is that time of year when we tend to see monsoonal showers. There's a disturbance to the southwest of us that could push in some moisture, generating more popcorn-like showers. So they're kind of hit and miss. It's only about a 20% chance right now as we get into Saturday of a slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm. That will take shape again on Sunday, and that's for both Park City and for Heber. Temperatures in the mid to low 80s as we get into your Saturday, but dropping into early next week back into the mid-70s. So Monday, 76 for the high in Park City, 82 in Heber with partly cloudy conditions throughout the weekend and early next week.
Okay. Hey, thanks. Well, stay tuned. Coming up, busy morning this morning. I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow with a preview of this week's county council meeting. Leadership Class 30 participants Gretchen Milliken and Chantel Guadarrama are joined by retiring leadership founder Miles Rademan. We'll be discussing this year's city tour and class project briefly. And the director of Utah Open Lands, Wendy Fisher, will be joined by Community Engagement Director Allie Arrow, along with Miss Wasatch County candidate Alexa Hewitt. We'll be talking about some open space issues, including Hewlett's Northfields Protection Initiative. Then stay tuned for This Green Earth, a conversation with E.E. Hsu and Andy Hecht with the Park City Community Foundation. They have released the information about the launch of their residential curbside food waste collection as part of the Zero Food Waste Initiative. Then a conversation about fast fashion and its effects on our planet. All of that coming up on This Green Earth. And of course, you can hear This Green Earth every Tuesday between 9 and 10. Well, taking a look at some local news, new court filings reveal which company hosted the large house party in Peoa last month that ended up in a firefight with two injured. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the company promotes parties around northern Utah.
One of the five men facing felony gun charges in the shooting co-owns Diamond Deluxe. The group court documents state organized the party in Browns Canyon. As of Monday, the house party was still advertised on Diamond Deluxe's Instagram, which includes footage from other parties across the state. Summit County prosecutors say the house party was hosted at a 7,000-square-foot short-term rental May 18th. The event space is no longer on Airbnb, but was still listed on Vrbo as of Monday. It boasts 43 beds and indoor-outdoor recreation facilities, including an indoor slide. Prosecutors say Summit County Sheriff's deputies found hundreds of people at the property when they responded to the May 19th shooting. Sheriff Frank Smith had four deputies working that night and then had to call in 20 more to process evidence and interview witnesses.
You know, the impact to the community besides the event was we had to bring so many people, and it cost about $25,000 in overtime. We feel like we know who the main culprits are, and we've reached out to our federal partners to help us investigate the case.
The party started at 11 p.m., but things devolved when party organizers asked a group of men to leave around 3 a.m. Prosecutors say those men went to their cars but tried to return to the party when they got into an argument with organizers from Diamond Deluxe. One of the men who was kicked out, 18-year-old Jose Enrique Zuniga Diaz, allegedly flashed a gun at the organizers. Two of them then fired shots above Zuniga Diaz's group. Five men have been charged for the shooting, and all are being held in Summit County Jail without bond. Attorneys for Diamond Deluxe co-owner, 23-year-old Francisco Enrique Romero Fuenmayor, requested bail June 1st. They blame Suniga Diaz for escalating the situation by flashing a weapon and say Romero Fuenmayor was defending himself and his business. A hearing to determine if the suspects will remain in custody pending a trial has been delayed until mid-June. Prosecutors recently updated charging documents to state that of the 42 shell casings found at the scene, 22 were near party organizers and 17 were near the men kicked out of the party. Four cars at the scene had bullet holes. At least two people were injured during the firefight. Diamond Deluxe did not respond to a request for comment Monday. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Wasatch County Council meets Wednesday starting at 4 o'clock. On the phone with a meeting preview, I have Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's first, primary ballots going out this week. Wasatch County all set for the primary election?
Yeah, I think we expect to get some foot traffic through next Wednesday.
Okay. Let's start with, before we hit the agenda, just the latest with the bypass road. The council last meeting discussed publishing either a resolution or a press release stating the council's support for conserving the North Fields as well as supporting the bypass process. So what did the council decide? I haven't seen a press release.
Yeah, so the council sent out, or they adopted a resolution that basically provided a statement saying that the council is in favor of preserving the fields as well as identifying a bypass. So I think the intent was to try and confirm to everyone that yes, Wasatch County is interested in a bypass and that we think that these things can both be done simultaneously. And really we're just encouraging everyone involved to make sure that we do what we can to preserve the nature, but also address our transportation needs.
So does that mean allowing the bypass to skirt through the Norris Fields?
It's ultimately, that's not a decision that the county gets to make. And I think that the perception is that whatever option is taken by UDOT, that there are things that can be done that can help preserve the agricultural and rural nature of the North Fields, whether that's conservation easements or other things to make sure that there's not a lot of development that takes place along it. And whatever alignment is selected, that how do we minimize those impacts and make sure that we can preserve those other activities?
Yeah, and my understanding is that the reason for this is that the city would like, and the county would like, to get those big tanker trucks off of US 40, 189, and kind of bypass them since they're continuing on their way, and then create more of a community and pedestrian-friendly US 40 there on Main Street. Since most of those big tanker trucks, though, are coming from Vernal, aren't they still going to be using Main Street? I mean, do you think they will agree to kind of make that left turn onto that new intersection at the Walmart intersection?
I think it really depends on a number of factors. And some of that, I know Heber City has some ambitions that perhaps the bypass might someday become US 40's alignment. And that if Main Street were turned back to the city, they would have a lot more options to make it into a more pedestrian-friendly, which would make it a less attractive option for any through traffic. So I think that's some people's long-term goals. I think ultimately it's gonna come down to there is already a high amount of traffic on Main Street. It's already difficult to get across. And if there are things that we can do to absorb the traffic, I think the bypass is gonna play into that. But ultimately it's gonna be a very multifaceted and long-term issue that we need to address.
Okay. Hey, and I was reading through the minutes from last week's meeting, and it in this discussion, it uses the first person pronoun, I, a lot. I mean, who's I? It says, I have a draft resolution. I think that the council has a high priority, in my opinion. I guess it was just like, shouldn't those minutes reflect who's saying what? I mean, and who's I?
Yeah, so the council were expressing, I think originally the county council passed back, so the bypass process has been ongoing for a few years now. And we have passed a few resolutions providing feedback to UDOT about the process. And all of those official statements have been unanimously approved by the council. what the council was doing at our last meeting was trying to negotiate with each other of what is something that they could unanimously support. So there were individual council members saying, well, I feel this or I feel that. And that's where we ended up, is actually a statement. And it's only a couple sentences long that is unanimously supported by the council. That resolution is actually available on our website, and we can distribute it even wider. We do want to make people aware that the county council is interested in those things. And I mean, the statement itself, it says, Wasatch County is actively pursuing means to responsibly preserve the rural character of our community through perpetual conservation easement, and supports the improvement of transportation alternatives through the Heber Valley EIS process. Wasatch County believes that both priorities can be simultaneously achieved and is willing to continue to work with all parties to accomplish these outcomes.
Okay. Moving on, what's the latest with the temple? Any news there?
To my knowledge, no. The judge provided a ruling just a few weeks ago, and to my knowledge, also hasn't been any construction effort begun. The legal process will continue, but I don't have any real updates at the moment.
All right. Let's see. Otherwise, this week's agenda doesn't look particularly interesting. What's the discussion regarding potential updates to Wasatch County transportation impact fees? Is this different than the High Valley Transit conversation?
Yeah, so the county has three different impact fees. Impact fees paid when a new building goes in, and we try to quantify what the impact to existing services are. And those three are public safety, roads, and parks and recreation. We're in the process of updating our roads impact fee, or that transportation impact fee. So it does not affect our transit services. What this is our road infrastructure costs. So we've worked with consultants to try and come up with estimates, and we're going to preview with the council some of what the kind of initial analysis is indicating, that we would be looking at some increases to our transportation impact fee that would help make sure that we're covering our costs when it comes to road infrastructure.
All right. Also for Wednesday's meeting, the council will be talking about repairs to roads and culverts because of flooding from runoff last spring. How much does the county typically have to spend on flood damage?
I mean, last year was not typical for us. For most of the state, we did receive some flood damage, and we actually received a presidential declaration of an emergency so that FEMA is able to help us cover some of the cost of recovering these things. But there is a cost to the county. So typically we try to do a lot of preventative efforts and handle things in-house. We might handle some washed out roads, from time to time. But what we're talking about here is much more significant infrastructure damage to that Snake Creek Road area due to the high water flows last year. It caused some undermining of that road. And what we're doing is we're contracting with a consultant to come in and help us identify not just ways to repair the road, but to prevent future issues. And we feel like this is a really prudent step. It's a great benefit to our county residents to leverage these federal dollars to be able to make sure that we have safe roads that can last through these types of events.
Okay. And so the outlook this year is what?
I think actually we're through most of the most risky part of the season. We've been able to have, I think, relatively gradual temperature increases, which has made that our flows have been consistent. There is really high flows coming out of the reservoirs. I believe the Jordanelle Reservoir, that's through the middle Provo section here in the Heber Valley, is going to have very high flows through this week. They're trying to make sure that we have capacity in the reservoirs to handle, fluctuations in how that snowmelt comes off. But they're doing their best to make sure that we handle it in the way that has the least impacts to property owners.
Okay. I also wanted to note that Wasatch County hired a new property coordinator, Jerry Jones. He was introduced to the council at its last meeting. So what will his job be specifically?
So Jerry works with the clerk auditor's office, and his role is primarily to help out with our Board of Equalization tax processes to make sure that the public is both aware of what we need, what their role is and what our role is, and facilitating to make sure that those meetings happen in the way that's really efficient. The last few years, we've had a lot of property tax appeals, and I think that there is a lot of demand to make sure that we are handling those in that most efficient manner. and so we can get through all of them in a timely manner, as well as making sure that we're following all of the state code requirements and being really transparent with the public on how this process works.
Okay, and you did get through all of last year's appeals?
We did, prior to any deadlines.
Okay. Wanted to ask you a little bit about the TAP grants. This is the Trails, Arts, and Parks grant. Is this a countywide tax?
Yeah, so actually voters approved, not last year, but the year before, at the ballot box, the Trails, Arts, and Parks tax program. This is a sales tax that's levied on transactions other than gas and groceries. And those revenues do get collected countywide, but we are distributing them between Wasatch County, Heber City, and Midway City. We've done those primarily based on exclusive population. So the county gets about 35% of those funds, which on an annual basis is about $400,000. So the TAP Tax Board met last night to talk about the applications that we received and what they might make recommendations to the county council.
All right, so why did you decide to split it up that way?
I think part of it is that there are unique needs across some of the communities, and Heber City originally was looking at doing one only for Heber City. And rather than have just a TAP tax in Heber City, we kind of brought everyone together and said, hey, we think this would be a good thing to do countywide, because there are a lot of recreation amenities that do benefit everyone. If you live in Daniel and recreate in Heber, or go and live in Charleston and go to Midway, all of those things are options. But what it also allows, I think, is more local control of those things. So there's not the pressure on the county council of necessarily, hey, well, the county is allocating all of these funds, and maybe they're doing it in a way that the municipalities disagree. So by doing it this way, Wasatch County is covering the smaller municipalities, and we've tried to make sure that our TAP board represents that diversity of smaller entities. But we still are able to address a lot of those needs.
So what's the split for the other then, for Heber City and Midway City?
I believe Heber City is a little over half of the funds, and the Midway receives the balance. So it ends up being something like 50, 35, and 15.
Okay. So if there was an applicant, they could apply both to Wasatch County and Heber City for the same project?
Yeah, so actually that was an explicit intent of the agreement that we have with all of the entities, is that we could partner on projects. I think if there is alignment between all three of us, the way that the county have structured our grant is that actually increases the priority at which we would fund a project, because it shows that there's a lot of consensus, a lot of support. And I think we do anticipate that there will be projects in the future that might require all of these funds. And I think there really is some exciting opportunities coming into our valley.
So my understanding is that you do have to have a cash match in order to apply?
There are some that only require in-kind. The county's process, we have different tiers of grant awards, and the larger the awards, the higher the requirements are. And so for smaller projects, it's much easier, much more simple and straightforward. For bigger projects, we're gonna require a lot more information and a lot more commitment. And those might be matches in a number of different ways.
All right, and then what are some of the projects that you're seeing on the county level?
We got 13 applications, and they range from some recreational infrastructure amenities to arts programs, performances. There's actually some really exciting things that we're working on related to charitable performances and making sure that we have improved trails and things like that.
Okay. There's also funding for a skate park?
So we don't actually have any TAP grants funds for the skate park, but we have recently partnered with a community partner to make sure that we are providing some new skateboard services in the county. So what this is we, the Wasatch County Parks and Recreation has partnered with the Carry On Foundation to bring skateboarding activities to the Southfield Skate Park.
Okay. Finally, I wanted to ask you, I've got Wendy Fisher from Utah Open Lands joining me later on the program. There are a few big properties of open space that have been on track for easements this spring. Can you tell us what's next and the status of funding for those projects?
Yeah, I think we hope that Many of them kind of get across the finish line. The county has awarded, I believe, two large chunks of funds to property owners in the North Fields. That would be the Gertz Conservation Easement and the Allen Giles Conservation Easement, as well as the Lundeen property, which is out on kind of the west side of Midway. We're hoping that all of those can get far enough along that the county can contribute our funds. We might need to issue the second portion of our open space bond. We initially only issued the first half of those. We were authorized for $10 million. We have five so far, and if all of these go forward, we would need to issue that second set, those other $5 million, to make sure we have enough funds to contribute to these projects.
Okay, done a good job leveraging that money, huh?
Yeah, well, the county, I think we generally offer about 20%, so we've gotten, only that 20% cost, we're getting 80% additional benefit.
Okay. Hey, Dustin, anything else you'd like to mention?
No, thank you for having me on this morning.
All right, appreciate your time. Thank you. That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, participants in this year's city tour spent 5 days studying the Colorado towns of Telluride, Durango, and Ridgway. In the studio with their impressions of the tour, I have tour leader and director of Park City Leadership, Miles Riedemann, along with members of Leadership Class 30, Chantel Guatemala and Gretchen Milliken. Good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay.
Hi there.
Miles, I'm going to start with you. Everyone on their best behavior, or do you have news to report so we don't have to read it in the police blotter of those towns?
I could say that everyone was on their best behavior till 8:30 when I went to bed. After that, I can't swear to it.
All right. So this was your final tour as director of the program that you brought to Park City 30 years ago. Was it bittersweet, or, I mean, have you had enough of just the 3 days of blah, blah, blah meetings?
It was a joyous occasion for me. So, sure, there'll be some elements of it that are bittersweet because I enjoy all the people in all these towns and the people I traveled with. But, no, it's time for me to pass the buck.
Yeah, and certainly while you were away, your replacement was named. It certainly was announced to that Class 30.
It was, yes.
Scott Van Hartesveld, and I was told that while City Manager Matt Dias was making that, he had mentioned to the class that Scott was actually solicited for the job.
I had nothing to do with it, quite frankly. I didn't even realize that they were offering him the job or even considering him. And that was on purpose because I had asked from the beginning not to be involved in the selection of my successor, because if you pick your successor, if you're too instrumental in that, you're just looking for someone like you. And maybe that's the last thing we need right now.
All right. So what's the process going forward here now that you've got a successor?
Well, I think Scott will become part of the city team. I read myself on July 8th, and he'll attend things with me. I know Scott. I know Scott and his wife for a long time. So it's not like someone I don't know. I do know him. I respect him greatly. And so he'll just start working with us, and I'm going to turn over 30 years of files to him and anything else he wants. And he knows that I love him, and I'll be happy to work with him in any way I can. Yeah. He'll be very successful.
Yeah. Great guy. What you have brought, though, to it is all of these connections and relationships. Are they going to pick up the phone for him to do next year's city tour?
Well, you make relationships by trying to make relationships. It's really not that hard. It's not rocket science. You call people up, you go visit them, you spend time with them, you go to meetings. They'll get to know him. He's a very knowable kind of person. He's been in Sunrise Rotary for years. He understands how to make friends.
So the city tour, you think, is a important component to carry forward?
I think it's, you could talk to these two lovely ladies here with me today. I think it's very important. I think it's a chance not only to learn from other communities, but certainly to create our own community. And going away for 5 days together really helps to do that.
Well, let's talk to Gretchen and Chantel, both members of Leadership Class 30, as I mentioned. In both towns, early childhood care and education was important, especially related to the employee population. Chantel, as a behavioral health specialist for Summit County, what did you see that these two towns were doing? Anything different than what Summit County and Park City have done to help ease the child care burden?
Well, one of the things is that they said it themselves, like child care became an infrastructure within their organization, so they took it as a priority. They made sure that like their staff had access to child care, that they took in their town as a priority for childcare.
So important as sewer and water lines.
Exactly.
Interesting. And what about you, Gretchen? I mean, what did you hear?
In terms of childhood, mm-hmm. or I mean, there childcare. Are so many things we learned. I agree with Chantel that they really just talked about it as an integral piece of their community, and that their community could not be successful without good, affordable childcare.
So what are they doing? I mean, we're providing scholarships. What were they doing? I mean, actually, a city funding it?
Yeah, so Mountain Town actually has a child care within the resort that they offer a certain amount, like 34 spots for some of their employees. Of course, they have a huge waiting list still because it's hard to acquire all that staff. But yeah, like it's a vital part of their staff.
All right. You also heard that in Telluride, many employees are commuting daily from Montrose, some 64 miles away. So regarding affordable housing, I mean, do these folks have bus service to get into Telluride?
We did not hear about any bus service. We heard mm-hmm. about long commutes. So I think people are getting in their car and on the road for 2 hours one way. So 3 and 4 hour commutes a day. Pretty crazy. Those who have been to Telluride understand it's a box canyon. There's a lot of preserved open space all around there, so there's not a lot of places to build. They are doing some pretty robust affordable housing projects. I did not go on that tour, but I heard back from that, and and it was presented to us. So they have a number of projects in the pipeline. They have a number of projects that they have built. They're trying to put as much affordable housing in front of people as they can. But again, the need is, just as in childcare, the need is greater than what they actually have in terms of units.
Well, I know that you're consulting with Moab to kind of look at some affordable housing solutions. Did you hear anything in this tour that makes sense for Summit County?
Well, I think one of the takeaways I took is just to be creative, be innovative, look what solutions might work for your particular situation. When we were in Durango, there was a project that we toured in which they had the opportunity to purchase a more or less dilapidated motel. And the city saw an opportunity that this could be turned into affordable housing. They put down a down payment on it. They had no intention of owning it. They put down a down payment, got a long contingency, and went out with an RFP and found a partner, a private partner. So they started a public-private partnership, and they are now currently renovating this motel into 1 and 2 bedroom units. Very small, but because the land that came with the motel had enough space on it, they're going to be building some 2 and 3 bedroom units on the property as well. And that comes with a whole bunch of very creative financing, and with the city being sort of a throughway for financing. So there was a lot of lessons to learn. You don't need to get into the details, but just to kind of think outside the box, I would say, is the takeaway there.
Yeah, Chantel, did you hear anything on affordable housing that stuck with you?
Yeah, I mean, it was like most of their staff, and we met with a lot of the council members and things, they were also in affordable housing. They provided about 60 to 70 or 80% of their affordable housing there. Well, was affordable housing. So that's a huge number, in my opinion.
All right. You also looked at transit in these communities. The tour interested in micro transit in Durango. Is it any different than what we're offering here with High Valley Transit?
They have like a nighttime bus that's like $2 share for a ride of the microtransit, which is, I thought that was really cool. It's just $2, which is a little different than the High Valley.
And for you, Gretchen?
Yeah, I mean, that was a fun, the Durango Go is what they called it. Durango is the name, look clever. Also, we were sort of amazed at how the gondola worked in Telluride, and that it really was it was public transportation. They have over 3 million rides a year on that gondola. You see people going up and down it. We're there in the summertime. This is not skiers. But every car being filled on their way up and down, going into the city for dinner, for entertainment, coming back up to the mountain because you're staying there or doing something else. So that really acted as like a train in a way. So that was pretty exciting to see.
So this is for tourists, because locals don't live up there, do they?
No, we were on the gondola, and this woman was on it, and she said, where are you all from? We got in this conversation. She's a local. She had a meeting up at Mountain Village. She lives down in the city, or in the town, in the village. And she says she uses it all the time. She'll put her dog on it, bring him up for a walk, you know. So I think you see just as many locals in a way as you do tourists.
Yeah, I understand that it's also due for an upgrade in a couple of years, which will not be cheap. So who's liable for that gondola? I mean, is it the city or is it the developer of the resort?
That's a great question. And we heard that from them that it's probably not 100% ironed out yet. They do know that it's going to be a very costly upgrade or almost a rebuild. And their agreement that they have right now with a somewhat of an HOA up in Mountain Village is ending in 2027. So they are currently figuring out how that is going to work and who's going to be responsible. And I think they are looking for the resort to take a bigger role in that because currently they really don't contribute as much as if they probably benefit from it.
Yeah, and I, you know, gondolas have kind of come and gone here in the Summit County. I mean, we've talked about one, you know, up to Deer Valley, you know, maybe one to the Utah Olympic Park. And I think these are huge, expensive, you know, transit carriers, people carriers. I mean, what about just connecting Camas to Colville right here? I mean, we can't even get that done yet. I mean, do we start looking at gondolas instead of just buses between our communities?
I mean, perhaps what we I don't know. I didn't check on all the figures, but what I heard was that the gondola cost something like, you know, let's say they were $5 a ride or to in order to maintain the gondola, whereas a bus would be $7 a ride. There was some kind of discrepancy there in which the gondola was actually cheaper than running a bus.
Interesting. So you also took a trip to the town of Ridgeway, about 35 miles away from Telluride. Anything there intrigue you, Chantel?
It was beautiful. I'm a huge arts person, and their whole entire concept within Ridgeway is to bring in art, to find ways to involve their community and bring art into their buildings, into their main street, or their downtown area. And what I really liked about it, and also in Telluride, was that their art kind of seemed like it wasn't just catered and put there. It was a community involvement. It was not as pristine or nice and well put, but it was like kind of everywhere and funky, and it just felt very like homey and community, a huge community vibe.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now that it's been discovered, I mean, do we see the same thing we see in all of the great places to live? You know, no affordable housing, increasing traffic, difficult to find childcare. Is that what's in store for Ridgeway?
I mean, they're concerned for sure. That is a concern of theirs. I think they're trying to be on the front end of it. They are providing. We did tour a art space combined with kind of artist and affordable housing above it. Was one of their solutions to make sure that artists and the creatives could stay in the community. They realize that they're not Telluride. They don't have the mountain right outside their door. So there's a lot of people coming there and buying second homes, and real estate prices are going up. They don't have quite the pressure that a Telluride or a Park City have. However, they're very aware that it's coming, and I think they're doing their best to be on top of it and trying to stay unique and authentic. As Chantel said, they have this really nice phrase that a woman that, was she on council or we had a presentation, she talked about the slow spaces, that they deliberately create slow spaces in their community. And these are spaces for people to sort of reflect, slow down, kind of funky little alleys between buildings, little pocket parks. You know, they have a creative way of placemaking within the community to make space for people to be outdoors and with each other.
So did this get the group then thinking about our 5 acres there that was formerly known as an arts and culture district?
It was definitely a piece of conversation on the bus ride back, for sure.
About that arts and culture is an economic driver?
Absolutely, yes.
Well, I guess, Miles, 30 years of visiting resort towns,
Actually, 55 years almost.
55. Okay.
Yes.
Well, so, I mean, if you were to move, where would you go?
I'm not going anywhere.
I know you're not, but I'm just saying, you've seen, you know, you've seen these towns grow and change over the last 5 decades, mm-hmm. And, you know, who does it best?
You know, everyone does it differently, but we all face similar problems, and you can't just parachute someone else's solution into your town because they usually don't work that way. But, you know, some of the great towns like Aspen and Telluride, we were just where I spent, you know, 15 years in Crested Butte, these are all great places. And so there are wonderful places all over the country, really, that are resort towns or college towns that are grappling with similar problems. You know, for a combination of reasons, and I've often said that, Park City is not the most beautiful of the resort towns. There are places that are more spectacular, like Telluride. But we have an airport just, you know, 35 miles away. That makes it pretty special for me, if you like to travel occasionally. So you just have to look at what fits you best. I've always liked, you know, Sun Valley, Ketchum, personally. That has a vibe that kind of appeals to me. But as you get older, altitude, I noticed this was the first time, like being up at Mountain Village is where we stayed in Telluride. That's at 9,600 feet. And I felt the altitude. And so that's an issue as you get older.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, kind of given our ease of transportation, it just really puts Park City in a different market, I guess.
It does. But we recognize that we're both a resort town, a bedroom community, kind of an international bedroom community, really, and a suburb of Salt Lake of the Valley.
All right. I'm pretty much out of time, but I really would like to have Class 30 back to discuss your class project. But maybe, Chantel, you can give us the bones of it?
Yeah, so it's going to be pretty simple. We're hoping to create an app that will kind of be a hub for our Latino community to find information and resources. We will definitely discuss this at a future time, but we're just really excited because we also have a partnership with hopefully another company that will be kind of seeing how this prototype or app works here in the community and maybe expanding it out to other communities. So, but we're really excited.
Yeah. How close are you to developing?
So we are hoping to be published within like 6 weeks here. So pretty soon within the month, we just need to gather all of the information, get a few organizations on board and kind of discuss all of that.
Now, were you part of the group that pitched this idea?
Yeah, actually, it was kind of my brain baby, if you want to call it. And then I am very grateful that the people within my group were able to see kind of my vision and kind of bring it all together.
Yeah, so why was it a project you think that everybody could get on board with?
Well, I know that I work at the health department, and we noticed that there's a huge gap in communication within our resources. We know that we have so many great resources, but people are not utilizing them. We have recreation that people are not my community, the Spanish-speaking community, is not utilizing. So we wanted to see if there is a way. We wanted to use the app, as most anybody that's Latino uses an app, has a phone that is easy to navigate for them to get that information rather than having to go through links or QR codes or scroll through a million Instagram profiles and things to get information.
Okay. Well, when you get that ready to go, let me know.
Will do.
Okay. And then hopefully you got a spot there for kpcw.org in Espanol.
Absolutely.
Okay. Hey, any other parting thoughts from any of you?
It was a great trip, you know, in every way. I couldn't have imagined a better send-off than this trip. The weather was beautiful, the people were beautiful, and I just loved it. It was great. So it is bittersweet, yes, for me it is.
Yeah. Well, we'll have you back, too, before you take off as well. Okay, thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
In. Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Leslie. Joining me now on the phone, Utah Open Lands Executive Director Wendy Fisher. Also in the studio, I have Open Lands Community Engagement Director Ali Earle. And we also hope to have Miss Wasatch County candidate Alexa Hewitt join us in just a minute. But good morning to you, Wendy and Ali.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay, let's, Wendy, start with you. With Wasatch County's approval for funding for some open space parcels, we talked a little bit with Dustin Graybow about this, but tell us specifically, what is it that you're raising money for?
Well, we have what we're calling our Northfield Protection Initiative, and it's really the Kickstarter to it is these first three properties that we've received some federal funding for. And I think what we talked about at the council meeting, there are three properties, the Giles property, the Gertsch property, and also the Kissel property. And they're amazing properties, one, because they're in the Northfields, which is an amazing resource for carbon sequestration, for habitat, and of course the American West heritage that whole area demonstrates. But they also have value because they can be seen kind of as entry corridor properties going into Midway and obviously coming into the Heber Valley. And so, you know, really, what we found just amazing was that we were able to receive almost $10 million in grant funding from the federal NRCS program, the ASEP ALE program. And so we went to the county to ask for funding to match some of that. But at the end of the day, what we were able to provide was basically a 6-to-1 leveraging for every dollar in open space bond monies from the communities. We're leveraging that with $6 from outside monies. But we still have more to raise, which I know is something that Allie and Alexa want to talk about today, to bring these properties over the finish line.
Okay. And we'll get there in just a minute. How much acreage are we talking about with these three parcels?
Combined, they're probably around 240 to 250 acres.
Okay. And that $1 million, I mean, where does that come from? Just fundraising from Utah Open Lands, and like we say, a fundraiser that's coming up?
Yeah, I mean, that's the main goal at the end of the day, is really what I like to look at is there are these landowners who love their land, and that's why they've decided to protect their land. You know, not every family member necessarily wants that protection to happen, and that's one of the reasons we oftentimes go out and find this funding. But one of the ways that the community can show these landowners who love their land how important it is that they've made the decision to do a conservation solution is to essentially help us raise the money that we need, the $1 million left to bring these across the finish line.
Okay, and then when we talk about a total amount of money that these property is worth, I mean, and again, we're just talking about the conservation easements, right? What's that dollar number?
Well, I loved how you were just talking about how in these communities that are just beautiful, that everybody loves, you know, the real estate values definitely go up. And that's no different for some of these agricultural lands. So as you mentioned, Leslie, just the conservation easement values alone total $23 million. So that's a huge leveraging of donation from the landowners.
Okay. Well, we've got Alexa in this. Let's bring those two into the conversation real quick. Utah Open Lands sent out a press release about how Ms. Wasatch County candidate Alexa Hewitt helping to protect the Northfields. Ellie, you want to just start and give us a little bit of background here?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Wendy mentioned, this is a $23 million campaign, and we are down to the last $975,000. So we are really excited to be less than 5% of the way there. But it's really important in this last $975,000 that we raise that within the community so that we're signaling both to other landowners in the Northfields the viability of this conservation, as well as, you know, signaling to these larger funding entities like these federal grants and federal programs that this is backed by the community. So yeah, it's a really exciting last final push. We have a few different events coming up, and obviously this partnership with Alexa, which is really special.
All right, well, Alexa, tell me, I mean, how first you maybe tell us what you're doing and why you're doing it.
So I decided to run for Ms. Wasatch, and for Ms. Wasatch, we have to have a community service initiative. And something that really stuck out to me from the beginning was the Northfields and preservation of this open space. My family is from Wasatch County. I'm an eighth generation resident. My grandparents live in the Northfields, and I grew up going there and exploring and being there with my family. And it's just something that's always been very important to me, and I've always heard things about protecting it and keeping it there and just all the importance it has for me and my family.
Okay, so how does that work? I mean, you mentioned that as a candidate for Miss Wasatch, you've got to do this project. So What is your project?
My community service initiative is preserving open space for future generations. And it's something that I think can be really relatable for most people in Wasatch County, because the Heber Valley is just known for its rural kind of town and the agricultural stuff. And I think it's just very important and was a good service.
Sure. So what does the initiative do?
This is to raise money and raise awareness to the open space and to the Northfields, because so many people don't even understand the impact it has and how important it is and how getting rid of it can just be so detrimental to our community.
All right. So one of the ways that you hope to raise money to support this, you're hosting a fundraiser. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So on June 22nd, we are having a Northfields barbecue. We'll have performances and a silent auction and some other things. They're $25 a ticket, and all the proceeds go directly to the Northfields initiative. And hopefully that will be able to raise some money and awareness.
Okay, so where are you holding the fundraiser?
This is going to be held in the Midway City in the Wasatch County, which is in an area that is somewhat close to the Northfields and next to all this kind of development that's happening in that area.
All right, and people can get tickets how?
If they go to...
Yeah, they can get tickets on Utah Open Lands website. So if you just head to utahopenlands.org/Northfields Protection Initiative.
All right, how are ticket sales going?
I think they're going really well so far.
We need
a lot more people to sign up and get some tickets, but it's going well so far.
All right, now tell me, when is Miss Wasatch selected?
This is happening June 29th.
Okay, all right. And then how many contestants are competitors are there?
There are 10 contestants, including myself. I have somewhat of a different community service initiative. Most girls don't really do much with stuff like that. It's more on things that are also very important, but this is just a little more out of the ordinary, so.
Yeah, oh, good luck to you. Also, I wanted just to, do you want to mention anything else about that, Allie, about the fundraiser?
No, I just, you know, tickets are live, and they went live last week, so we're really happy with how ticket sales are going, but it's an opportunity for a lot of members of the community to just get involved. If you want to go and learn about the protection initiative, as well as, you know, figure out how you can play a role in it. The address for this is 144 River Road in Midway. So, and you can get more details on our website.
Great. Hey, Wendy, is Transit to Trails returning to Bonanza Flat Open Space this summer?
Yes, Transit to Trails is returning to Bonanza Flat. And before we leave, Alexa, I just want to say one of the things that after 34 years of protecting open space, your hope and your dream is that the next generation and the next generation after that really looks at how important this is. So we really appreciate Alexa choosing this as a cause and being involved in it. But yes, Transit to Trails is moving forward. And in fact, Utah Open Lands received a $10,000 grant from the Central Wasatch Commission to try and bring Transit to Trails to the Wasatch Front. We feel this is a really great way to deal with some of the parking congestion that happens up in the Bonanza Flat area. So Park City is taking on the Transit to Trails coming from the Wasatch back, and we're trying to get Sandy and Cottonwood Heights and even Salt Lake City to be involved in a Transit to Trails from the Wasatch Front.
So is this going to be an everyday transit system, or is it just, again, with weekends?
Yeah, I think mainly we're looking at the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, also some Sundays.
Okay. And also, we've been reporting that the Park City Council will be looking at paid parking for those trailheads in Bonanza Flat. Is that something Utah Open Lands supports?
That's actually something that Utah Open Lands has been very engaged with researching and understanding. We've looked at various different communities throughout the Intermountain West to see how that they are dealing with paid parking. And I think one of the things, Leslie, not to give too much away to our presentation that we're giving to the Park City Council, but certainly what we're seeing, you know, on the Cottonwood Canyon side and even in various different areas on the Wasatch Back, is that paid parking is something that various different land managers are looking at. We saw a huge increase of recreational users during the pandemic, and that has only continued. The reason that people move to Utah is its scenic beauty and its outdoor recreation opportunities, and we're seeing what that means. And so one of the ways to manage really partially the resource, but also the fact that, you know, more and more people are aware that these trailheads have become crowded. So that's actually something that we were a part of researching, and we'll be making a presentation to the council this Thursday.
Okay, appreciate your time. I'm out of time. Thank you all for your time this morning. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City.